This is the intersection of assistive, educational, and information technology. Whether it's technology for inclusive classroom learning or tools for community success, technology can promote independence, and inclusive technology has become more available for everyone. Welcome to the Inclusive Technology for All podcast with your host, Mike Murata.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Inclusive Technology for All. This is episode 73. And in keeping with the tradition for the past several weeks, we're going to have the audio from yesterday's Assistive Technology Town Hall as the main content for this episode. Actually, the only content for this episode. It'll be about an hour long. Tons of good information shared. And if you don't haven't had a chance to be with us on one of those Monday meetings, it's great stuff. But if you can't get there, we understand. People have hectic schedules now. Do you have a question or a concern you want the group to talk about? Let me know. Either shoot me an email at mike@mmatp.com or send me a message on Twitter at mmatp, and I will pose your question or concern to the group. So stay safe and enjoy the episode. Hey, everybody. Hello. Welcome to this week's AT Town Hall. Nothing unprofessional happened before we started. We can all assure you that it was totally professional conversation happening prior to the recording button hit. Welcome. Today is, I have to look, April 20th. And we are back, and it's another Monday, and we've all decided we're having a good week so far. That's good. I'm Mike Murata. This is another one of our AT Town Halls from the ATAC of New Jersey. There's all our socials. Reach out to us. Connect with us. Find our YouTube channel. That's where all these recordings live after we're done. We have a handful of people. Some of these people are here today. Some are not. Others will pop on. It's a rotating cast of characters, and we're glad to have every single person with us. You don't have to be shown on the slide to participate. You can put your camera on, you can turn your mic on, you can jump in the whole conversation. It doesn't matter. We're willing to take everybody and anybody, so please be part of the conversation. You can use the chat if you do not want to be on video, but come on, why wouldn't you want to be on video? Look how much fun we're having on video. So please feel free, join in. This is an hour that's pretty loose. We don't really have a whole lot that's structured. And if you were on right before we started the recording, you recognize there is very little structure here. It's just a lot of chat, but please feel free. I do have one link to share with you, which is that shared resource document, which is at the bit.ly there, bit.ly/remoteaccessforall. And it's a crowdsourced document that continues to grow every week and gets a lot of good resources in it. So if you have something, feel free to throw it in there. One more plug for the AT Chat website, which also has a lot of this great information on it, atchat.info. That's our brand new website with our webmasters on here with us now. Alyssa's here, Kelly's here, our webmasters. Thank you guys for putting that all together.
I was waiting for the verb.
Yeah, what did I even say? I don't remember. Webmastering.
Webmastering, I think.
I was going to use that later when I said they're doing an excellent job webmastering it. There you go.
Yes, Alyssa.
Perfect. So there's our website for that. And with that, there's not much else to preamble. So we jump in. Who wants to share? Who wants to start?
I have something positive and good and fun to share. So Beth, was it Friday? I've lost all track of time of days. Okay. So on Friday afternoon, Beth and I kind of hung out on Zoom and talked about like, what are some options? What are some things you could do? And our therapists are using kind of a combination of a specialized teletherapy platform called Therapy, and they also have the option to use Google Meet. And some of the, they're not complaints, but just some of the, like, we wish it could be whatever. I am constantly trying to make their lives easier because I kind of feel like that's my job. So what I did this morning for 2.5 hours with them was go through something that's called Jamboard, which a ton of people don't know exists. I just put in the chat box a link to the presentation. I know a couple people on Twitter, when I talked about it, had asked, will I share it? This is a share version of it. I took out all of the stuff that's like really specific to our district that we were talking about, but I had a lot of fun figuring out how do we do things that are interactive. The very last slide on the presentation has a link to a sample Jamboard, and Jamboard is just an interactive whiteboard, and it has a bunch of really fun googly kind of tools in it. But I made a screen where, you know, the folks who use Handwriting Without Tears can use the wood pieces and move them around to make the letters. I put in a speech activity. So basically I was just kind of trying to meet their need of interactivity, and had a lot of fun with it, had a lot of fun figuring out. We have some speech language pathologists and even OTs that use lesson picks, which is why Beth and I kind of were bouncing ideas off of each other of how could we incorporate kind of the slides portion or activities or stuff from lesson picks into Jamboard. And I have therapists that are like really excited, and I always worry when I throw another tool at them, but I just finished that at 10:30, and I have three therapists that have already said, can we do this? What about this? And can we do that? And so I feel like we've maybe hit the spot of need. Like, I didn't want to just throw a tool at them, but I think we were able to really figure out how to fill that little void of we want a little more interactivity, and yet at the same time do it because we're a Google district, it's still HIPAA and FERPA compliant and all those fun privacy things. I had fun and they had fun kind of going in and interacting, I did like a basically a Jamboard 101 with them and went through all the features and the slides, and then we just went in and played. And it was fun to see them excited.
And I learned a lot about Jamboard, so that was really cool, and I appreciate it, and I'm sharing it with some special OTs that I know.
Very good.
Some in-house transfer of ideas.
Love it. I was just talking to one of my OT friends this morning, and we were talking about doing that same kind of thing. We were looking at, she didn't want to necessarily learn a new tool or insert some new tool into her toolbox. So we were talking about this same kind of idea, write in Google Slides or drawings. And even the ideas that we kind of settled on was doing Google Slides, because each activity she could work on with the students and just add another slide right underneath it. So all the activities from above could still be there, and they could just work down and basically create this kind of interactive, almost like a portfolio that the students could use every time they got together for their sessions.
So. Yeah. And I think that's the great thing. If they're already in a Google atmosphere or a Microsoft atmosphere, and I know Microsoft Whiteboard exists, we have access to it, but my teachers, my therapists are very ingrained. Like when I say go to the tic-tac-toe board or click on the three dots, like they know what that means, and Jamboard has all those same things. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I had to teach them new language about where to go to do something. Jamboard's automatically saved, they're in your Google Drive, you can still, like, they're used to that content. And so I think that's super important to kind of stick in what they know right now. I think their knowledge saturation is like they're just at a point where if I add a whole lot more, you know, and there'll be some therapists that look at this and are like, nope, sorry, staying with therapy in my regular. Okay, great. There are going to be some therapists that are like, this actually makes my life easier. Let's do it. But I'm super hesitant to put any other tool in place, because they are already super overwhelmed and they're doing great things. I mean, we have a huge percentage of our kids getting teletherapy who've been getting it for weeks. Like, they jumped in and did awesome. And so being able to give them a tool that doesn't overwhelm them, I think, is the important
part.
And Sarah dropped in a video that she made combining, taking things from lesson picks. So that's in the chat.
Awesome.
So I took your, Alyssa, I took your link and I took Sarah's link. I'll check those out later on. So that's great. And it'll be interesting to see what really the difference is between, say, Google, using it in Google Slides or using it in Jamboard. I'll be interested to see the difference.
Yeah, and Jamboard's just got some things like on an iOS device or a phone, which a lot of our families have a phone and have a tablet but don't have a computer. It has some of the auto draw capabilities, you know, a handwriting recognition, so they can start to write a letter and then they have to get close enough for the computer to guess it, which is great for our kids that don't like an adult telling them they did it wrong. I can just say, yeah. Hey, if the computer can't recognize it, you need to try again and go slow, remember your strokes, so that like then it's getting correction from the computer instead of another adult telling them they did it wrong.
Yeah, great.
Like that, awesome.
One thing I have noticed on Jamboard is that if I move something on my screen and I actually have it to where my kids can actually see it on their screen as well, if they move something, if they don't click out of the item they moved, I can't see that it's moved.
Yeah, you have to kind of complete the action.
The box is away from it. They have to, click outside the box that they're done moving.
Yeah, you have to kind of do the whole action cycle. Otherwise, I think Jamboard doesn't think you're done moving. It's like if I hold my cursor on something and I've left clicked, but I haven't released it, it doesn't see it as a complete action.
Yeah, right. The activity is still active, so it just keeps sitting there. Oh, excellent. Cool. Thanks. I'm going to check that out.
It was fun.
Your slides and everything in between my other three meetings today before my head bursts off my neck at about 4 o'clock.
And I just want to say too, it was interesting because looking at Jamboard with Elisa was perfect because I'd also just looked at Microsoft Whiteboard, which is very, very similar, and they have the same things with the snap, with the like the shapes and the letters, which is really cool. And it was nice just to see that there's a couple different options, because I also agree 100%, Elisa, with what you said about people are at saturation of something new, and so if they're a Microsoft, like to use the Microsoft might be where is comfortable for them, or if they're a Google district, to use Google is what's comfortable without having to throw too much at them at a time. And I think that's really critical right now, to be respectful of where people are coming. Because I think a lot of us sitting here in this group are experimenters and early adopters, mm-hmm. and find it invigorating and exciting to find a new tool. And we just have to remember, it's hard for me sometimes to remember that other people, they start shutting down when we throw too much at them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Thank you. I had a good thing this morning. I found out that one of my suggestions at a school to open up an AT open office hours for parents was accepted, and they finally said yes, and we're going to do it tomorrow.
Yay.
And I'm excited, but I really don't know what it's going to look like, and who knows, maybe I won't be excited when I tell you about it next week. But I don't care. I think it's going to be good. Let's see what happens. This school's just been back from spring break, and so they're finally getting into their therapy services, and all of the other pieces are happening remotely. So I don't know what kind of questions I'm going to get, but I'm excited for it. So we'll see.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is great.
Excited.
I can share a positive thing.
Please.
So I played some games last night with a couple of folks, distance wise. It was totally low tech, other than the fact that we were using Zoom, which was great. So we played one word. I played with Sean Pearson from up in Edmonton, Canada, and Brandy Wentland, who's over in Arizona. And it was really fun because it's just something to take your mind off of stuff. And so, I've been trying to do more games and more fun stuff. And actually, tomorrow at 5 o'clock Eastern time, Chris Bouguet and I are going to do a little quickie discussion on games on Facebook Live with the lesson picks. But just doing something that, other than the fact that Zoom was the medium, doing something totally low tech where I was writing on paper to play this game was really positive.
That's nice. I like that. If there's a link, Beth, for that, can you drop it in the chat so we
have it? I'll do that. I'm trying to figure out where's the chat. I can't.
Oh, geez, I don't know. That's a technical question. I don't know.
I think you have to go on the bottom.
Yeah.
Are you on the bottom of the screen?
Oh, I see it. I got it now. Yeah, I'm just, there we go.
Or hit Alt-H, use the keyboard shortcut.
Yay, there we go. I got it.
The keyboard shortcuts for Zoom and Google Meet now live right here on my, they're taped to the front of my desk now to turn my video on and off, my audio on and off, and to show the chat. All right. My little cheat sheets right
keyboard
here.
Keyboard shortcuts.
What's that?
Yeah, your keyboard shortcuts.
That's my keyboard shortcuts right here on my little cheat sheet. Anybody else? Something positive or a quick tech thing?
Hey, Mike. Yeah, it's Hillary. How are you?
I'm good, Hillary. How are you?
We're technically on vacation, so we're great.
Oh, yeah, that sounds awesome.
We need a break. So a lot of good things in the creativity of teachers has been really cool to see over the last month, that teachers have really stepped up and are being more creative in their video content, their audio content, their lesson content, but also they're really starting to think even more deeply about accessibility and making it accessible from the start. So I think those are really positive things that we can take with us beyond all of this. And the other thing is sharing stories from students who are engaged in this as learners, you know, distance learning, and how they're using their tools and what successes they have and what challenges they have. And I know you shared this and I appreciate it so much. It's called At the Heart, which are accessible and inclusive AT success stories, which are from user perspectives. So I have a couple more people lined up. But love if anybody has a student that wants to share their story, or even if it's an adult that wants to share their story about how they're using inclusive and assistive technology and how it empowers them, I'd love to have them talk and share. So a lot of good stuff going on amongst all of the uncertainty.
That's good. Thanks, Hillary. Thanks for sharing that, because I would have forced you to share it a second anyway, because it was really good. Can you put the link in the chat for everybody so they can find where that podcast lives?
Yep, on it.
Awesome, cool, thanks, it was great.
Yeah, Hillary, that was really, really great.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. That was a nice welcome break from two back-to-back meetings, and I took that 15 minutes in between and listened to that. Made me feel very good.
Well, I learned from you, Mike, you gotta keep it short and keep it under like 20 minutes and give them some questions to just guide it. So they'll be pretty standard, but like I said, I would love to expand it beyond our school district in Maine, because there's a lot of wonderful stories. And I think the more we can amplify it, the better off we're going to be. And if we can take lessons from our kids and our learners on how to design those opportunities and what they need and integrate that, I think hearing those stories really just helps on so many levels. So but it's good stuff. I'm proud of them, those users. I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, they did a great job. They're really good. I love honesty, and who better to ask than a student for a little honesty. It was great. I thought it was really good. We had talked about that last week. Was it here we talked about this idea? It was? Yes. Kelly shaking her head, yes. This idea of collecting user stories. Alyssa just popped on out of nowhere all on my screen all of a sudden. Right? Didn't we do this last week?
Yeah, Chris. We assigned it to Chris, remember?
We did. And Chris isn't here, so let's pick something else to assign to him this week.
Yeah, I'm curious how many students he's gotten so far.
Yeah, I wonder.
I did a Flipgrid in my area, and I haven't checked it lately, but I had 8 students responding, starting from first grade through 12th. I had one senior, and I used Flipgrid. And the very first student that posted, he said, the one thing he wanted his teachers to know is, I want my teachers to know it's too easy for me. Oh. And it was very sweet. And, you know, a variety of different responses, mostly elementary school age students. So that was one thing. I'll put that link in here too, if you want to watch, see those. But I have a positive that I'm really excited about is I've been reaching out to my hometown central administration staff for a while, and we finally got to talk last week because I want to make available my services. You know, I know a lot. I'm always learning, but I wanted to support the town. And so I met with this assistant superintendent, the director of student services, the assistant director, and then the AT, part-time AT specialist in Reading. And so we figured out, okay, SPED seems to be doing a great job in terms of accessibility and meeting individual learner plans for their students, but the general gen ed teachers need a lot more support. So we decided we're kind of on kind of hybrid vacation this week. This is typically considered to be April vacation. Today is Patriots Day, which is a holiday in Massachusetts. We always have the Boston Marathon today. Not happening. But so starting next week, we're going to do office hours twice a week for the rest of the school year, I hope. Cool. So, and it's going to be directed to the gen ed teachers. Of course, we can add SPED as well, but let's help the gen ed teachers really build in universality, inclusivity, accessibility into what they're doing. So I'm very excited about that.
That should be great, Karen. I'm curious to hear how it goes with people popping in. I've been doing those for one of the districts I support, and it's been a blast. It's not full for the whole hour, but I kind of think that's the point. People just pop in. We have a quick conversation. We get some one little nugget of something they need, and then they're gone. And then maybe someone else pops in. I think it's been really nice. Yeah, that's cool. Good luck with that. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
I will share a positive.
Yeah.
More of like what I'm very grateful for. So last week I did a webinar on Google support with Google Chrome. And it was in the chat box, just having people in our field join that webinar and really help out. It turned it into a really deep conversation in the chat box where, you know, when you're doing the webinar, you get too busy and it's really hard to keep an eye on that. So I appreciated everyone who was helping out behind the scenes. And I thought, if anyone ever needs help with the chat box, I'm happy to jump in as well, because it really made a difference. There were questions that got answered that I didn't see until it was over, and I would have felt terrible that had I missed them. So I was very, very grateful for that support in this field. So if I can ever support anyone in that regard, just feel free to reach out anytime.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. I really like the chat. Karen was mentioning this. Karen did a webinar for ATEC on Friday. And because I had nothing to do, I was able to manage the chat box. And I thought the same thing, Kelly. I'm like, oh, this is really cool, because Karen doesn't have to worry about it the whole time. She can continue on what she was doing and then check back in once in a while. But we kept the conversation rolling, which was really nice.
So yeah, I think having that back channel moderator of some sort, you know, like when I was presenting this morning, our lead SLP, you know, took that role and could, you know, interrupt if there was a question that was like super important and she felt like, okay, everybody should hear this, or she could answer it or save it for later. But we've done the opposite when she's been presenting. When she presented on SLP Assist, I kind of did that moderation. But I think it's super, just like Kelly said, it's hard when you're the one talking, because you see, like, especially like in Google Meet, you see the question, the chat pop up, or it pops up in Zoom, and you're like, oh, like, I can't read the question and look at the slide. You end up losing your place. So having somebody be able to do that is super helpful. I agree.
Yeah.
I would pretend I didn't see the hard ones, and then Louise would answer them.
That's a solid move, actually. And I'm seeing Jen in the chat box, and I'm sure she knows I've done that once or twice in the webinars Jen and I have done. You just, oh, that one must have zipped right past me. I didn't see that one.
Oh, I missed that one. Yeah.
But you know what? It speaks to how valuable the chats are simultaneous to the Zoom meetings, because I have been in a few webinars that haven't had them, and it is incredibly frustrating to not have that back channel conversation happening. And I wish it was a requirement. If you're doing PD through these meetings, definitely include a back channel.
Well, I wanted this whole conversation was just led to just making sure Karen got to get up and say again, I don't like when webinars don't have a chat box. So I'm happy. That's why I started laughing. We achieved victory there. Sorry.
Just from an accessibility standpoint, yeah, the questions get answered, but I think it's also an opportunity for somebody who, I mean, I've done webinars, like when I did AAC in the cloud, I think, you know, I had an AAC user who asked a question, but didn't necessarily want to, you know, interrupt the conversation or turn a microphone on, and it gives an opportunity for somebody who wants to have that question answered or wants to offer input, but doesn't feel, for whatever reason, comfortable with the microphone or camera angle of things.
Yeah. I agree. It's and I just looked through the list, and you know, there's 18 of us here, but there's not 18 of us on the video right now. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes that chat so important, is everybody gets their voice heard and is participating. That's awesome.
But it is important to know where that chat is if you are the person in charge, because my nephew came over the other day telling me all about his wonderful chat that he was having with his teacher, that she was upset that they were all saying hi to each other, so she muted everyone. But she never commented or said anything about the chat box. And at the very end, one of the kids said, "We had a great chat in the chat box. Thanks." Yeah. So the teacher's name. She had no clue there was a chat box.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's so,
so what did we learn? Know the features.
What a class of 25 third graders were all chatting about. I would love to have seen the report from that chat.
The other thing that's important to remember too, if you're going to share the chat, anybody who chats privately, those things come up in the chat log. So when like those things get downloaded,
yeah,
a little heads up. Yeah, if you're you're the moderator, those private conversations get pulled out also. So you got to go through and kind of dump some of that stuff. Or maybe you don't. And hey, that's your choice. That's fine.
Are you all reflecting, like, what in the world have I privately chatted?
Yes.
What did I say in a chat privately to somebody that now I'm thinking, that's not something I really want out.
I'm from Oklahoma, the number of private chats I have received from people about Tiger King, I can't tell you. I've yet to watch a single episode, but I keep getting asked the question.
I got to do a parent webinar last week about using Alexa with the AAC devices, which was also very fun. But their chat was just alive because they were sharing and supporting each other the whole time with ideas on how they might be able to use it. I mean, and they were muted and there were, 25 plus of them, so they couldn't. I offered for them to be live, but they're perfectly happy to share in this back channel, which was
nice, right?
So Jennifer, when you did your parent one, because my SLP who does AT with me and I are working on parent resources, how did you structure your kind of parent support? Was it just here's a couple slides and then let's all chat, or was it structured kind of activities?
This was structured because it was kind of company sponsored. It was like a half hour quick for parents ideas type of video. So for this one, I had slides to anchor it, videos to show them, encouraging conversational chat, but it was kind of informal. And so it was all kind of discussion through the chat. When I'm doing more one-to-one or small group parents, I just open it up. But this was a little more structured for them. And then they got to keep any of the links and images for their as a handout. They could try.
Like, look at the P on the side.
I think it depends what it is you're looking to do.
I know for the, why don't you?
For the one we're doing tomorrow, for that school district, I'm not going to plan anything. I'm just going to wait and see what people want to talk about. And I think when we get to the second one, then maybe we might have a little bit more of a structure, thinking that if a lot of the same kind of questions popped up, we might try to plan some things and then open up for some conversation. But I think at this point, I'm afraid to plan anything for them on this first one because quite honestly, I don't want to scare them away.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know what they want from this. So I think if nothing else, just somebody to be on the video and just nod their head once in a while might be enough, quite honestly.
Yeah. And the reason I was asking, because we've kind of been, I'm looking at my district is, it's not just such a dichotomy, but like I've got my kids and parents who have high incidence disabilities who really need, like we have snap and read district wide, and I'm finding more and more parents who don't know that. So I wanna do like a, here's a parent overview, and I've shared a lot of those resources, here's how you get access to Learning Ally and Bookshare and snap and read. And then I've got this whole other set of parents that are really kids who have more low incidence disabilities that need communication supports. Primarily we're looking at like, how do you model at home and not overwhelm the heck out of them. I think that's my biggest fear because I am me, and like we talked about before, like we get excited about a thing or a product or whatever, and I don't want to be like, here's all the stuff that you could use, and they go, I'm never coming back to you again.
Exactly.
And again, that balance. It's a fine line between here are all these great resources that you could be using, and yes, Snap and Read works with Google Classroom, and yes. But like not wanting, knowing me and my personality, not wanting to like completely overwhelm them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what Paula wrote in the chat, this idea from a state level of thinking about what to share and how to share it without feeling like you're just dumping on everybody, giving them too much. And I think that's all of our, that's a tightrope we're all walking right now, because everybody has said it already and you're right. We like this stuff and we get excited. If you tell me I had to play with something and try it, like I'm mad that I'm sharing my screen and I can't go visit Alyssa's slides right now. That's really just kind of, it's getting me right in the heart because it's bugging me. But
we'll
I'll
be there later. They're not going anywhere.
But it's so cool, Mike. Give it once.
I could have went to them and then kept talking to you guys, but I can't. So, all right, it's fine. But I got to recognize not everybody's like that. And right. So I think finding that moment to giving just enough information to have them feel positive as they move forward.
Well, and I think we have to look at it even in our general ed. I mean, my sister-in-law called me because her son had been given like 7 different logins. They had a math login, an English login, a science login, and none of it coordinated. None of it had the same password. None of it had the same username.
Right.
And I told her, pick 2 for this week. Log in and learn those 2 this week. Next week, if you've got those 2 mastered, pick a 3rd. Mm-hmm. You know, reading and math are your first 2. Go for those 2. And you just message a teacher saying, we're doing 2 this week. Because you have to, we can't throw everything at them and there be no usage. We have to make sure we're building in that usage and learning how to use it properly.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing that's kind of all of this has exposed is, you know, like our district, I guess one of the grants we had to have a single sign-on platform. Mm-hmm. So they have a single portal that they go through, but I work with other people in other districts and they don't. I said, go find a password holder. So LastPass is what I use. Mm-hmm. Every password goes in there, and then I teach the kid that one last pass password. Then everything else is saved, and it can automatically update. And like, so you don't have to memorize because they were in that same spot. It's like, here's your 7 passwords, and I'm like, you're a 7-year-old. Like, that's just not a reasonable expectation.
Your password.
So there are other
because that's your memory span.
Right, yeah. Right. There are other password holders out there. You know, I think 1Pass, I don't know what they all are, but LastPass I use, and there's a bunch of others. And I think just, I use it just because there's no way I could remember all the passwords that, that come across my world. But that I've had to make that recommendation for places outside that don't have a single sign-on portal. Edutone, Clever is one.
Right.
I know there's a couple other ones.
Yeah. Yeah, and think about how you're sharing with people. The greatest thing I saw from a meeting last week, and I think I said it last week, but I don't remember, so I'll just say it again. One of the districts I work with, all of the related services are dropping their links to their sessions in a shared single document. So all the parents have to do is go to a single document, and it has the schedule of all of the your child's events. And what they're doing is talking to the parents about when your student logs in, make this screen their home screen in Chrome. Like when they open up Chrome, let that be the first tab that pops open. And then you can just click and go right to any meeting you have to go to. You're always going to that one spot. And the team has editing rights, but the parents only have view rights through the student's account. So all they're going to see is the edit, which is nice. It's a really nice, clean spot to go for everything, which has been really good.
And I have a student in another place. We set up a Symbaloo for the same kind of thing.
Same idea,
it's like
right?
A visual launching point that all of their 7-10 places they need to go are on there. And then they have a tab that's like fun.
Yeah.
So they can get to it. I mean, I used Symbaloo long ago with a kid who's an iGaze user as a launching point just because it was a very visual, quick way for him to be able to get what he needed to do versus our single sign-on portal. Yeah. But I think it's also helpful in this case if a school isn't doing that, which that's amazing, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Doing a single depository, but if not, then having a parent do it on that end with something like Symbaloo, there's others out there, but that is a one-stop shop.
Right. Yeah, it took a lot for the one staff person to set this all up. So he went through everybody who had an IEP and set up a form for every person and then connected the teams to it. So it was a lot of work for him. But from the user side, it's so clean and it's so easy. And as long as you can give him a shout out for all the work he did, no one else had to do it. And he was okay doing it, but yeah, it was great. It was really good.
Wow.
Right, I had one question. Karen mentioned one question that came by, and this was James put this out. So maybe Kelly will jump back on. And since she won't share the webinar with us, maybe she'll share some stuff with us. So James asked the idea of, how we're using paraprofessionals to support students remotely. And that's something you mentioned that's something they're having difficulty with. So other quick some quick suggestions for James that we can give him?
I'm waiting for
Kelly to start talking, right?
I would suggest having the para educators work with a lot of the technology piece, maybe the troubleshooting pieces before they get started, for sure. Mm-hmm. And having, I talked with, during the webinar that I did, I talked a lot about this is a time to really give paraprofessionals the professional development that they rarely get. So sharing all of the webinars that we're doing and all of the resources and set up book clubs, do Netflix parties, do whatever you can to get that deeper knowledge as a paraprofessional. I was a paraprofessional for, I think, 5 years. And I was just kind of reflecting on what I wish I would have been a lot better at the beginning had I known more about behavior, had I known about autism, if I would have known about writing and reading differences. You know, when I started, I didn't know, and you're just kind of figuring it out. But I just think that this is just a great time to start giving our peers that professional development that's needed in some capacity. And then it's also thinking, like I talked about when I was a para, what I did in this kind of continuous learning, what pieces I would have missed in the class, like how can we transfer that? So again, it's just teaching, it's working with the students still remotely, but having them help with turning on the speech to text, you know, the text to speech, all of these built-in accessibility settings that we would typically be doing in the classroom supporting our students. How can we transfer that as far as having the paras teach the students how to do that? So just a lot of, it's just a good time for training and sports.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would love to see paraprofessionals use, even in my home district, my own kids, to be available during that live Zoom time to moderate the chat, to let them in if they're in the waiting room, like be a co-presenter with some of these to support. Like, I feel like we're totally underutilizing the paraprofessionals to team up with their teachers.
Yeah.
Kelly validated our district's work on paraprofessionals, so thank you, Kelly, for doing that. We had started a Google Classroom at first to put all of our resources around tech and inclusive design, and then our teachers got together and designed some training opportunities kind of based on what paras wanted to know, and the tech tools were the first thing. And so paras have been working with Book Creator, and they got to choose the tools they wanted to work with, which I think was highly empowering for paras. My mom was a para, so it's kind of a big deal, but that, to see what they've created, and then they actually are, we use Doxy for our service delivery, which is HIPAA and FERPA compliant. So our ed techs are working with their case managers to actually be in the room and do some co-treatment and cross-planning and collaboration and some supervision kind of stuff, and also just checking in and making sure kids have what they need. So, you know, and that will continue. And actually, paras have given us lists of what they want to learn more about, and we're providing resources for them in an accessible format so that they can do that. And then they're just, you know, and they're getting service hours for it. So they've done some virtual book clubs. They're doing some really cool things. So thank you, Kelly, for the webinar, but for validating kind of what the district wanted to do in our case. It seems to be going really well.
Yeah. Awesome. And I've heard from some of the schools I'm in that they're doing, where the students are in the live Zoom meeting and the para has called the student at home on a phone and is on speakerphone, and they're having the same kind of conversation they would have had in the classroom. As the teacher was working, they're working side by side at the same point. And it's just another layer of technology there, but it's doing a nice job of creating a similar experience for some of the students to what they're used to, which has been really nice and really helpful. So that's exciting.
I think also a good time for just, you know, even the paraprofessionals understand accessibility in general, because, you know, as when you're in special education, you want to hug all of your students and you just want to make sure that they don't fail and you're doing everything for them. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a great opportunity for paras that, you know, to kind of step back and see how students could be more independent, for sure. And I think another good kind of task for para educators to help out with is captioning videos. So train our paras how to caption videos, because as a teacher, we're trying to get all this content out really quickly. So doing trainings on para professionals knowing how to caption videos, whether it's on YouTube or whatever they're using, would be a really good skill to utilize.
Yeah. We have some paras who support students with practicing to take paper documents and make them accessible, get them electronic and get them in Google Drive. And we have some paras who are very good at that because of the students they support. And now some of the work they're doing is taking the other packets and just making electronic documents of them and get them up in Google Drive so everybody has access. So we're taking that one little skill that they had that they're really good at and then using that to kind of multiply their efforts across the school, which is awesome.
Yeah, and when they have access to the work that the students, even if they're paper packets, a lot of times the paras have those keywords that they already use with the students in class that they can attach to those packets as well. Or if it's something, if a student is just used to every morning that para professional in the hallway saying good morning, how can we replicate that? Whatever can ease anxiety. There's so much anxiety happening right now with students with remote learning, and you know, especially if you're on, you know, if you're on the spectrum and that routine is completely messed up and you know that paraprofessional had that one thing that he or she would do every day, how can we transfer that into a virtual atmosphere? And it can be done, absolutely. And I think, you know, and I've talked with a lot of students, and sometimes right now they're trying to give themselves an out. Well, no one's here to do this for me. Mm. You know, like you kind of see this helpless behavior that they're just used to being in class where, you know, it's like the student I went to observe one time, and he walked in and he just stood by his locker. And I was like, wonder what's happening. But he was waiting for his paraprofessional to come over and unzip his jacket, take it off, and then put it in there. So you kind of see this learned helplessness for sure. But I always say, this is not a time for you to give yourself an out, because guess what? Your Chromebook will do this for you. You know, your Mac will do this for you. Your iPad will do this for you. So it's kind of like, as you know, as educators, we have to support that as well, as far as being independent and remote learning, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a great opportunity. That's for sure. Anybody else about paraprofessionals? Anything else before we move on?
We've had one instance. We're definitely not at the upper echelon like Hillary and Kelly is in terms of utilizing them. We are providing professional development for them, but I do have one student that is kind of in that category Kelly was talking about, that just needs a lot of extra like prompts to get things going. And so the para's kind of connection point has been 20 minutes before they're supposed to do their Zoom meeting, or not Zoom meeting in this case, it's a Google Meet. You know, her job is to jump into that same Google Meet with the kid and be like, okay, do you have your camera adjusted? What do you need for this activity? Kind of exactly what they would do in the classroom, but 20 minutes ahead so that the kid is ready to go with their peers right when whatever activity is happening live happens.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And when schools are building in some of those buffer zones in between when things are happening, those are perfect little moments for a paraprofessional to slide in with a student and give a couple quick little points and then move forward as they go. And remind them that there are ways that they can connect remotely in real time when some instruction is happening. Like, are there back channels they can work through? Do they need to call each other and do that? So what are some of those other strategies they can use? Kelly and Alyssa, you're right. We could replicate most of what happens with those interactions in a classroom. We can do that virtually. It might take a little more, but I think a lot of those interactions can still happen.
And I think I would hope what we see at the end of this is that we have kids that did have that learned helplessness, that really what we needed to do was empower and push a little. Mm-hmm. And they had some of those independent skills, like from my OT brain, they had the ability to organize themselves. And we've over relied on that paraprofessional in a face-to-face traditional school setting. Now, not always, obviously there's absolutely a place for paraprofessional support, but I think we really have an opportunity to look at, you know, what kind of fading of support could we do post all of this, knowing Johnny was able to do A, B, and C, which at school he played, can't do it, some dependence on another adult, wait for that prompting, instead of, I kind of got forced into this hole and I had to do it, and oh my gosh, wow, look, I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what we look at is when we start to return to students coming back to school and paraprofessionals supporting them, that's our coaching moment with those educators to say, how did this go? Let's reflect on what happened and how will that inform the way we do things moving forward? And I think we have to be very deliberate about that when we move back to live instruction.
Yeah, I dropped
an article in the an article link in the chat that I think is really a good article for everybody to add to their repertoire. Five reasons to be careful about what, you know, to be concerned about the assignment of individual paraprofessionals. It's about be careful what you wish for, and especially it's part of the conversation with parents because they think having a one-to-one instructional assistant is really like the best thing for their student, but not necessarily. And this article points out some of those unintended consequences. That's really great. Yeah, and Kelly, I'll never forget something you said at FETC where you said you thought you were just doing your job well when you were, you know, with promoting dependence, and you thought that meant you were doing your job well. And I think that that's a very common, thought process for paraprofessionals, because that's what they feel like we've been hired to do. And so I think we want to just rethink that.
Yeah. But it goes back to that communication conversation, right? We have to communicate what we expect from these educators. This is our expectation. A lot of times they're not given any of that guidance. And then it's like, well, I'm going to be the best I can be. And I'm going to carry everything and do everything. And I'm going to be the person that I think this situation needs. And maybe that's not what that situation needs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, Alyssa, go ahead.
Jennifer is adding a lot in the chat. Jennifer, I'd love for you to talk about it with all of us. Do you mind? You're dropping in some great ideas.
Yeah, no problem. So what I was finding, I was doing a lot of parent coaching. I do assistive technology. I'm a speech language pathologist and do AT in our district. And so I primarily work on coaching a lot of our teachers. But I've been called in because all of our students were allowed to take their iPads with communication apps home with them. And since our teachers haven't done a lot of home training now, they're not necessarily comfortable doing that. So I've been doing a lot of home coaching. So what I did is I took a base presentation of mine and then just added in at the beginning, what are the goals of your child? And we add in a couple of those slides so that we can keep that at the heart of what we're doing. So as I'm coaching parents and going through this information, and this, like the one student that I'm using this with right now, it's going to take us probably the whole month of weekly visits to go through all this information because there's a lot of content. But we started that initial conversation out with what are your goals for your student while you're at home, because they might not be the same as what they are at school. And I want them to get the most out of it. And I want to make sure that we're addressing their needs at home as well. And we revisit those slides at the start of every session, because some things may have worked well with ideas that I've suggested that they're trying at home, and some, you know, might not have worked out. And then we need to maybe go back and revise those goals. So that's kind of at the heart of what we're doing. And then this is just what I've shared out with other staff members, but for the students that I keep working with, we keep adding to these slides, parent concerns, ideas, suggestions. And what's been nice is I can share it out, kind of like what you were talking, Mike, about that Google Doc. I can share that out with everybody and give teachers editing access to it, but leave it as view only for the family so that everybody can add in information if they need to. But if we think about Google Slides, the nice part about it is we're just putting key information on each of the slides. So it's breaking it down into, I think, more manageable and user-friendly for our parents. If we're just putting those key points on the slides, I can link in videos and make it really multimedia for parents. So if I have an idea, like I was, we're talking about aided language and modeling with a family, I dropped in a video of how I did that with our curriculum. We use the Unique Learning Systems ULS curriculum. And so I could model what that looks like so that when the parent is trying to replicate that at home, they have an example of what that might look like. So I've just found that it's been a really nice format for our parents, and the feedback from parents and from staff has been really positive.
Yeah, Jennifer, I'm looking at these slides and they are amazing. And what I thought was instantly, this is a great tool for now, but I think it would also be just awesome for the transition period.
Yes. And actually, you say that.
Fifth to sixth,
yep.
Keep going.
And so the student that I started out this with is that exact same situation. So we started out with his elementary team, but he's a fifth grader going into middle school next year. And now with all these parent coaching meetings, we did ask the family if they were okay with it, because I wanted to make sure that the parents felt heard. And if we had too many people in on like a Zoom meeting, I didn't want their voice to get lost. But the parents also felt it was really important. So we're talking about transition in our district, and what does that look like for our students that aren't going to be back in elementary school, or maybe they're moving to middle school or high school. What does that transition process look like right now? And so through some of these parent coaching sessions, I'm able to now have his whole middle school team, the speech therapist, the teacher, and the paraprofessional from that classroom is learning right alongside the parents, which will be easier for me next year because they'll have already got some of that. And at the same time, you know, the family's feeling a little more comfortable with the transition as well. But it's nice because it's sort of a working document that can travel with the student as they move along. So, I mean, on many levels, I've really found that it's been really beneficial.
Yeah, I think you've essentially created like a digital portfolio.
Right.
Yeah, and we have students that even
parents. Yeah.
And we have one teacher who does her IEPs this way. So she works and breaks down the entire IEP into Google Slides. And then it's a very student-directed IEP. The student works, she was a teacher for our autism students, and she works with the students. And so I just sat in on a meeting of hers on Friday, and she had the same sort of format and even linking in some of those different things into these Google Slides. As the years go on, it kind of adds on and kind of is a, like you said, a portfolio of all the students' work and where they've been.
Yeah, because I mean, I was telling Jennifer in the chat box, I have teams, especially of kids that have advanced devices, that I have a collaborative Google Doc for that does some of this, but I like this format way better because I think it's not so overwhelming. Like, I know my Google Doc has great info in there, but I also know like to find what you need to find may be a lot more difficult than this, that you could even put on the second slide, a table of contents that's, you know, here's the links to all the things in the slide, and just jump to that main slide as it gets bigger. I think it's way, way more better than my Google Doc.
It's way more betterer.
There you go. That's what I was going for.
That's exactly what it is. Awesome. Thanks. Now that's another link I have to look at when we're done. I don't like sharing my screen. It's making me focus on one activity.
Okay, so you know how the rest of us feel when you share all these book recommendations that we want to go get and buy and read. At least, you know, it's a digital format and I'm not spending your money.
What do you want? You want a book recommendation?
No!
No! I give you one.
That's how do you not have to two read. Screens, Mike? I just don't understand.
That's my pile.
Yeah. Mike, why don't you have a tri-monitor system going, or a wall of monitors? Come on.
I have a second computer over here, but it's dead right now, and I can't bend down to charge it, because then you'll see me leave the screen.
You don't have a second monitor somewhere in that basement of all the extra tools?
How do you survive with only one monitor? Karen, what book is that I should now possibly read?
Is it backwards?
No, it's good.
You're good.
You're right.
Oh, okay. It looks backwards to me. Yeah, this is a new one I just got. Has anybody read it?
No.
Super. It's, yeah, quick and easy, you know.
Yeah, got an Amazon order over here already happening.
What?
Got an Amazon order already happening over here.
40 concrete strategies that improve adult learning. So I especially got it to help me provide more effective professional development.
Nice.
So. Hopefully this will be, and it's out of cast, and so we'll see.
Art of Coaching Teams.
That's the one that's on my book pile next, The Art of Coaching Teams.
Yeah. The what is it?
The Art of Coaching Teams.
Oh, I think I have that one. Yeah, The Heart of Coaching. Oh, I got that one too.
Art, A-R-T, art.
Oh, I got that one as well.
There you go. Yeah. Back on the pile.
So this is completely off topic, but Kimberly, I have to say something about your screen. If you had a fan blowing on your desk and just let your hair kind of flow, I'm totally doing that next week. Just get a fan to make your hair blow and it would look spot on.
If you're talking about my beach scene.
Oh, yeah. It's the best.
Everybody has commented on that and they've said they think like you can hear the sound, but I don't know. It could just be my computer's kind of loud. So.
Yeah, just whistle into your microphone every once in a while.
At least I can imagine I'm at the beach. If nothing better.
Yeah, you know, get that desk fan.
You can do that in Zoom. If you upload a .mp4 or a .mov, it can be the background and it can have movement to it.
Does that work even if you don't have a green screen?
No, you need the green screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've tried to find green sheets and it's not worked out well for me either.
Amazon. That's where I bought mine.
Everything on Amazon is like $60 and 5,000 weeks to get it here.
Really? The one I bought was $12 and I got it a long time ago, but it was like $12.
Yeah. I think it's like the document cameras. Everything has massively become unavailable.
You know what? You might have to paint that wall behind you. Paint it green.
Because I got all the time.
That is an awesome Google slide presentation you shared with us. And I love your slides too. Is that a theme that you got from Google or did you create it? It's awesome.
The theme, I think I just Googled. You can Google, lots of people make different when Google slides. And that was
in Zoom. Hmm. I mean, it's an option, but it just is perfect. So I could get a fan and that would be dual purpose because, you know, for the hot flashes.
Yeah.
And for, you know, to look like I'm at the beach or something.
But yeah, Jennifer, I like the paint, I don't even know what to call it, paint brush stroke theme.
It's really visually very calming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure where I found it. I can try and find it again and I can tweet it out or something.
Isn't it? I had that one for a while.
Isn't it from Canva?
I don't think it is from Canva. It was just some random
one
that I googled
and found. Yeah, I've seen something similar in Canva like that, but I've not seen it on a Google slide set up. So,
because Canva has that whole section now of presentations, some of them, for some reason I want to say that's where I've seen that one.
Yeah, I've used it for quite a few presentations because I like it too. So,
All right, guys, it's after one. We've done it once again. We've done it. What I'll do is when I put the link to the recording out, I'll pull the chat also and I'll save it as a Google Doc and I'll put the link in the description of the video.
You know, one of the things I noticed with this one, oh, sorry, Mike, you were still going, but
okay.
The sense of urgency seems to be less of an issue than we had initially.
Yeah.
Like I think people kind of settled into what's working in their districts or, you know, so that's kind of a nice thing.
That is nice.
I feel like I'm breathing
into a next phase. Yeah, it's like a next phase, right?
Yeah. I feel like we've definitely entered
summer.
Yeah, I think we've definitely entered like phase two or phase three where I feel like I can exhale just a little bit.
Yeah.
A smidge.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood is right. All right, guys. Well, now I'm 2 minutes late for another meeting. So. Love to
Thanks,
chat.
Mike.
I would actually love to chat all day, but no such luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Probably one of my bestest times of the week is this hour right here.
This is my most bestest.
The most bestest, yeah. You know, it's a tie between this and AT Chat and, you know, that Friday night when you're just going to shut the computer off for a while. It's a three-way tie.
It's right up there. 1, 2, 3. 1A, B, and C. All right, guys.
Bye.
It's a pleasure. See you guys later.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. Do you have an idea for a future episode? Leave an audio message via SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/ITS podcast with your suggestion. It may appear on an upcoming episode. To stay current on all things inclusive and assistive technology, follow Mike on Twitter at MMATP and visit his website at MMATP.com. For inclusive technology resources and all the previous podcast episodes.